Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday, the day after our national election. It's Wednesday, November 8th. Currently 17 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Mostly cloudy skies. We're reporting 20 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Leslie. Yeah, getting our taste of winter still across the Wasatch back today. Those chilly overnight lows are going to continue with below average daytime highs. In fact, just expecting freezing for highs along much of the Park City area. 32 degrees is forecast with sunshine after just that half inch of snow that was reported, I think, at the library. I feel like there were some spots that saw higher amounts, though, with what I saw on some of the webcams. So after that little bit of moisture, we're looking at a dry stint of weather. Northerly flow will stay in place, keeping temperatures colder than average over the next couple of days. 13 degrees tonight into tomorrow, with 38 degrees for the high on Thursday with sunshine. So high pressure will keep things nice through much of the weekend. Temperatures climbing as well. Southwest flow will increase over the weekend as the ridge that's building in place starts to shift east. We'll see mid-40s over the weekend with some increasing cloud cover next week. Could start to see some rain and snow showers late Monday with snow on Tuesday. Temperatures will drop from about 50 degrees on Monday ahead of the front to about 34 for the high on Tuesday with snow showers, as I mentioned, off and on Tuesday. Could linger into midweek as well. Heber looking at just 39 for the high today. Sunshine, 8 degrees overnight into tomorrow. 43 for your high on Thursday. We'll continue to see temperatures rebound into the 50s this weekend. Low 50s are expected for Heber, overnight lows in the low 20s, and then 53 on Monday, dropping to 40 degrees on Tuesday, with, again, moisture pushing in Monday evening and off and on snow showers, if not a wintry mix, if temperatures do get up to 40 in Heber on Tuesday afternoon.
Okay, and I was just going to say, with those two accidents there at the foot of Parley's Canyon, I-80 eastbound, what a mess. I can see temperatures in Salt Lake City below freezing. I'm suspecting road conditions may have had something to do with this.
Yeah, from what I saw on traffic cameras, it looks like there was maybe a little bit of a dusting of snow or maybe some ice towards the center lane, which is where the accident looks like it may have occurred, and they've got that lane closed off due to the crash. So watch out for those icy spots this morning. We haven't had a lot of moisture overnight. So it's just that lingering or residual moisture from yesterday, I think, causing some of those concerns. Still looks like about an 84-minute drive from what my traffic computer is showing. 86 minutes, excuse me, eastbound from Salt Lake to Park City. So if we can delay any commute heading up the Wasatch back, I'd do so.
Yeah, it's backed up to about 700 east now at this point on I-80. And then almost.
I-215 as
well. Yeah, 215. Yeah, almost to the bend. So crazy. Yep. All right. Thanks, Nate.
You bet.
Again, those accidents, I should say, are estimated not to be cleaned up until at least 9 a.m. So if you don't need to be on the road, you're just going to sit in traffic anyways. Just hang out and have another cup of coffee and listen to local news. Let's take a quick look at our election results before we get into our first interview for Summit County Council Seat A here in Summit County. Incumbent Roger Armstrong will serve another 4 years. Tanya Hansen, who ran unopposed for council, will retain her seat B, and newcomer and Democrat Megan McKenna is 1,000 votes ahead of Republican Ari Ioannidis for seat C. Summit County voters also approved Proposition 18, which will add 0.5% sales tax for emergency services by more than a 2-to-1 mark. In the Park City Board of Education race, Susan Goldberg and Eileen Gallagher both running unopposed. They'll take districts 1 and 2. Kathleen Britton has the lead for district 3. And in North Summit, voters rejected a $144 million school bond. In the North Summit Board of Education race, Waylon Bond will take seat 2 and Maggie Judy taking seat 3. And school board candidate Susan Richens will assume seat 1 and Waylon. And then Wade Wolstenholme retaining seat 1 in South Summit School District. Dan Eckhart will take seat 2. Lydia Whitmore and Ty Metcalf running unopposed will take seats 3 and 5. And taking a look at Wasatch County, Midway voters approved a $5 million open space bond by about a 3-to-1 margin. Wasatch County Council incumbents Kendall Crittenton and Mark Nelson will retain their seats. Colleen Bonner and Spencer Park ran unopposed. For the Wasatch County School Board, Tom Stone will take seat E, Kim Dickerson taking seat F, and Brianne Dedrickson overtaking incumbent Marianne Allen taking seat G. Again, these are all preliminary votes. We've got mail-in ballots still needing to be counted over the next few days. And once that happens, another week, 2 weeks or so, we'll have actually official canvases where these votes are certified. You can always get the latest by going online to kpcw.org. And stay tuned. Coming up in just a minute here, I'll be talking with Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Later on, Summit County Clerk Eve First will be calling in, and Park City Manager Matt Dye is previewing this week's City Council meeting. As we've reported, the Summit County Council hosting a public hearing Thursday night to take input on the Dakota Pacific real estate development plans. That hearing will take place at 5:30 at the New Park Resort Hotel Conference Room. On the phone with a preview of that and more, I have Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Leslie. I hear there's other news around today, so we'll make this quick and efficient, but give everybody as much information as we can.
Well, we've been reporting it all morning, and again, people can go online to kpcw.org. This, of course, very important to, I know, residents of Summit County, at least the Snyderville Basin and Park City areas. But first, I usually open these interviews with what new applications have come across your desk. So any big ones worth noting before we dive into Dakota Pacific?
Nothing significant. We're actually still rummaging through the previous applications. The larger complex ones are going through rethoughts and discussions internally, but nothing new to be concerned about. As soon as it is of concern or open up for a public hearing, we'll get the news right out there for everyone to pay attention.
Okay. Now, as far as Dakota Pacific goes, it feels like a done deal. How will the public comments on Thursday make a difference to what actually gets approved or not?
I certainly hope it's not a done deal, and I hope people don't walk into the room thinking that that's the case. Obviously, this has been a while since the council and the public and Dakota Pacific were all together in the same room. If I think about it, it was December 21, wasn't it, when we had the larger public hearing on that. Since then, we've had the round of involvement, shall we say, enthusiastic involvement by the state legislature. There's been legal agreements going backwards and forwards and arguments going backwards and forwards. 2 years of backwards and forwards on what a new plan should look like, what a new development agreement should look like, if anything. The public have been very influential in that. There have been some significant input from the public, but things have changed. The dynamics of Kimball Junction have changed, not the least of which the county's involvement in the actual land area itself has changed with the purchase of the Skull Candy building, the parking lot north of that. The county has actually become a significant proportional landowner in the what was originally the Tech Center project. So while the dynamics have changed, traffic has changed, issues changed, the influences have changed, the Olympics have coming in, UDOT with their plans for Kimball Junction. So there's a significant difference in the opportunities and impacts of this development. So the conversation for the last year has been much more of a how do we come up with some mutually beneficial proposal. And the reason for that was because of the public involvement at the last go-round. So I urge anyone who's interested to come to the meeting, pay attention, learn about the changes, learn about the potential opportunities, things that may be available to us, the potential threats that may exist, the concerns over traffic, etc. Please come learn about the project. Bring an open mind, but reasonably skeptical.
Yeah, everybody loves parks and libraries and civic centers, but I think what the big concern is density. And can that be reduced? Dakota Pacific pretty much has a number, and they're sticking to it, no?
They have what they're going to need for their minimum return. We're going to have a list of minimum needs and wants that want. Density is an idea that sticks in people's mind. It's a measurable number. Is less better than more? Well, it really depends what you want. So as well as density, can we layer on the other concerns? The design aspect, the diversity aspects. Density in and of itself tells you nothing about the quality and character of the space. So if you're trying to introduce an appropriate mix of uses to make bring the public benefits forward that we're actually looking for, the actual commercial aspect of it has to be there in order to pay for those public benefits. So if people walk in with an open mind, can we deal with the impacts of density, and can we benefit from the potential benefits of those densities?
Yeah, well, density, I think in many minds, equals traffic. So as a planner, maybe you can explain how adding 1,000 units, which could very well mean an additional 1,500 residents could be a good thing when we already have such a cluster now.
The trick to traffic actually is a density question. There's a direct correlation between density and private car use. If you spread people out so it's less density, same number of units, then they drive further. If you put people within walking distance, biking distance, transit distance of existing transit infrastructure, existing services, employment opportunities, then clearly they're not going to give up their car, but they do have an option. And it's the option that once you reach particular threshold densities, that you can see a dramatic drop in the actual amount of single vehicle car traffic, the amount of journeys made by cars, because people have that option. If we tie this to the existing transit center, the future BRT, potential gondola connections, pedestrian access from east to west side of 224, then concentrating that development in the particular locations where the development and services already exist, that will actually, it goes against the grain, and what normal people think is that it actually reduces the amount of cars on the road. It's a critical balance of uses.
So one of the so-called benefits of this is the redo of Highway State Route 224, which would get done regardless of whether or not this project gets developed. Isn't that the case?
There would be some changes. You obviously have their plans. We have our dreams and wants too, and to the extent that this type of project will influence UDOT's plans, we hope that that's the case. What we're trying to do is bring enhancements to UDOT's plan. One of those enhancements being what, you know, we imagine to be a pedestrian bridge linking east and west sides of Kimball Junction over 24. That in itself, if we can convince UDOT this is a good idea, we don't just want a rusty metal cage for pedestrians to walk across the road, but actually make something a decent bridge structure that connects people so people actually seek it out. If you can actually cut the amount of car traffic that drives east and west across 224 and give people the pedestrian option or the biking option across 224, then that actually improves traffic. Mm-hmm. If UDOT accept the idea that this type of plan is of benefit to them, then maybe we can enhance their project and they can actually accelerate their project so that we get the benefits earlier.
So what comes first? Do we have that figured out yet? I mean, the improvements to 224, or does the density get built first?
They're going to have to go hand in hand. The remodel of what we're going to call the P3 mixed-use area can start. The impacts to 224, they're going to be occurring and increasing on a regular basis anyway. The UDOT plan is not very high on their priority list. It's not moving with any degree of speed. It's manageable for them right now. We're looking at the two options. Remember, UDOT have been in their study exercise for a number of years now. We need to accelerate their improvements, and this type of development will do that. We can go to UDOT, actually with Dakota Pacific as a potential partner, and influence down at the state legislature to see if we can actually move their project forward. They're not entirely dependent on each other, but they will, of course, influence each other.
Sure. And as people come for the public hearing, I mean, we're talking about this as an entire single property, even though Summit County's got some of its own land and some of its own proposed development. But as this comes to the county council, it's one unit, basically.
If you think about it as a large-scale master plan, so what people will be looking for is, as you said, what gets built first? It's not just the highway and then the built project, but what portions of the built project are brought forward first? Which parts of it will occur and when? How is it going to be paid for? What are the impacts on this? So that whole phase strategy is a large area. I'm guessing it was probably like 60 acres-ish now, maybe a little more. It was like the 55. We take some ownership of it, but now it's like 60 acres, including the east and west side of Landmark Drive. So that doesn't all get built at once. So what gets rolled out in the first year, in the second year, what gets built out after 5 years, and then after that, you know, when do we bring the public benefits in? Do they come in early? Do they come in first? And obviously, part of the public benefit is a parking structure underneath where the existing Richens building and that existing transit center in. So they have to go hand in hand with the benefits to the transit system. So first and foremost will come the majority of the public benefits, and then the rest will follow. But people need to come and look at this as a large-scale master plan. Who gets what gets built first, who pays for it, and when does it happen?
All right. And also I note, and this may just be kind of a holding thing, I mean, a medical facility is being proposed. We've got one across the street. So do we really need a second medical facility, or is that just kind of a place mark?
There has been interest by different healthcare groups in the project. This is actually probably a holdover from Dakota Pacific. A number of years ago, we were actually approached as part of their original plan, as part of the Tech Center project, would a medical facility work here? There was interest from different groups, you know, in the market. We know it's a need. We know we have ongoing and increasing medical concerns. Those healthcare concerns are not going away. How specialized this would be, whether it becomes a, I mean, think in terms of when the original tech center was approved, Astley Healthcare was like, for example, one of those research ideas that was going to go into the tech center project. So it's actually, it's a legitimate market project in public demand. There's, you know, a potential need for it, and there is a market for it. But before anybody steps into that field, they're looking for some kind of reassurance that it is possible as part of the plan.
And does Dakota Pacific, do their plans at this point require any exceptions? I see a four-story apartment building on the drawings, and that, my guess is that's above any height limit.
It's on its base level, yes, it probably is. But if you think about the original proposal, the original tech center proposal had significantly increased height limits over the base density. So this is actually, the bulk of these buildings are actually reduced in mass and scale from the previous proposal. Before we had like 5, 6, and 7 story buildings in the previous iteration of this plan. So they're actually being broken down into smaller pieces and much more characteristic of the grain of the area in terms of the built environment. So more buildings in terms of the number of buildings, but much smaller scale buildings, more in keeping with the human scale aspect of the building that the Kimmler Junction Neighborhood Master Plan calls for.
All right. This is the final public hearing scheduled for the public to you know, put in their 2 cents before the county council scheduled to vote and actually make a decision by the end of the year. Are there any more opportunities, though, for input?
I would say there's always the opportunity for input. After Thursday, depending on what happens on Thursday, I'm sure the council will be reacting to that. I don't think we're going to be, I might be speaking out of turn, but I don't think we're going to be saying, great, we did that, let's fold it and have a vote. But there's probably going to be looking to move forward in terms of agreeing that the development agreement is going to change. What further input on each individual project will then probably come forward. Each project individually will then have to be applied for and go through a process.
Okay, once again, that public hearing is happening at 5:30 on Thursday the 7th at the New Park Resort Hotel Conference Center. Before I let you go, where are we on the county's request for proposal for the Klein Dolly parcel?
Jeff Jones, who's been doing the bulk of the work on preparing the RFP, and I, as his loyal sidekick, will be returning to council next week to go through the latest iteration of that RFP. If anyone's been following this, we've been going backwards and forwards with council, responding to their reaction to what we put on the table. Hopefully this may be the last round, but maybe we'll be bringing some other input and influences to say, is this the right idea, is this the wrong idea? The variation in ranges of what we were proposing, I think the council decided that was too big a range and maybe we should come back with something that was more narrowly focused. We're going to do that next week and see what the council reaction is going to be. Hopefully we can get something out pretty soon too.
All right, Peter, anything else you'd like to add?
On a piece of progress, the slope side second phase of their workforce housing project, was approved by the Snidable Basin Planning Commission last week, and the unique processing in the canyons is that the public hearing will be held for final approval by the county manager on Tuesday of next week. So if anybody's interested in that and providing additional input on that project, it's due to sit in front of the county manager next week. Get in touch with me or Tiffany at the planning department, and we'll get you any information you might want.
Okay, I believe that's a market rate development.
It's a workforce housing. It has a variety it's a variety of pricing in it, but yes, it's more market rate. It's not a for-profit rate. It actually has those deed restrictions associated with it, but they're more, it's a, shall we say, a different type of product than the previous phase. So there will be more market rate in terms of that 80% or 120% type of ranges, but the deed restriction is, yes, you must be employed within the canyons as the starting point.
Okay. Peter, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye now.
That's Summit County Community Development Director Peter Barnes. Still to come, we'll be checking in with Summit County Clerk E. First and Park City City Manager Matt Dias. First, when Summit County voters hit the polls, national issues were on their minds yesterday. KPCW's Connor Thomas has this report.
It was a tough choice this year, says Parkite George Maloof at the Kimball Junction Library Tuesday. The most important thing to him, he says, is elected officials' honesty, national officials.
I feel when I talk to people about elections, they don't really have facts that they use to support their choices. It's more about how they feel, and I don't feel like that's a good way of electing our officials.
Maloof voted early like most of Summit County, but drove his son to the polls so he could vote in person Tuesday. The Summit County Clerk's Office had received nearly 20,000 ballots by November 4th. The last time they counted this year, there were 29,750 registered voters in Summit County. Just 700 of the early ballots were from in-person voters. So Summit County demonstrated a clear preference to vote by mail this year. And if the mail-in voters are at all similar to in-person voters, they were motivated by national issues this year, including this Trump voter in Colville.
I mean, that's the number one issue.
Yeah.
Whether you like the direction of where our country's headed or not.
And for you, you're thinking he could turn it around?
Yes.
Gotcha.
He's already proven he has.
He preferred not to be named because his family has a business and doesn't want to take a political stance. Summit County usually votes blue, and any Republicans tend to be concentrated on the rural east side. Still, KPCW met single-issue voters at the Colville polls who expressed a preference for liberal positions. Their priorities included women's reproductive rights and recreational marijuana legalization. Pinebrook resident Tim Grizel had three key issues: immigration, border security, and women's rights. His hope this election?
That we decide it quickly and it's not contested.
20-year-old Parkite Kira Dosa voted for the first time this year.
So I feel very, very strongly about women's reproductive rights in women, and I think that it's really, really important to vote blue. I mean, even if you're voting for, it doesn't even matter who you're voting for, but I think you should vote, because if you don't, you're not being heard.
That's despite describing herself as not very political. Dosa says she came to the polls Tuesday because she has a clear idea of who she wants for president and Senate. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Election Day has come and gone, but it's not quite over for the staff in our county clerk's offices who will be finalizing the vote. On the phone with an update of how things went yesterday, I have Summit County Clerk Eve First. Good morning, Eve. Thanks for joining us. So let's just start. How did yesterday go for you and the rest of the workers in your office?
It was a great day. We were extremely busy all day long. Our polls were busy. Our office was busy. We worked wonderfully as a team and were able to troubleshoot issues as they arose. And so we're really pleased with how yesterday went.
All right. And what has mail-in voting done for citizens? It's certainly convenient, but when you get so many people at the polls, is it like worth mailing out a ballot?
It's convenient to have mail-in voting. It's really helpful for our office because it allows us to get votes processed ahead of time, and it allows us to have results ready for you, and early results ready for you on the night of the election. The results we put out last night, we were able to get results from 41% of voters, and we weren't able to actually count the votes that we received yesterday. We wouldn't have had time to do that and get those results out last night if we just had in-person voting.
Hmm. This year seems very different from years past, just given that the election went on for days and weeks, just given lawsuits and things that were filed. Nothing really close this year, though, huh?
Doesn't look like it right now. We still have a lot of votes to count, but I had a chance to watch just a snippet of the news and try and hear from other counties about what was going on. And it doesn't look like there are too many close races. And so maybe that's the benefit of all of the discussion we had beforehand. People had time to really think about and vet what they wanted and express themselves clearly.
Mm-hmm. So you say lots of votes to count. How many are we talking about?
Right now we know we have at least double the amount we've counted still left to count.
So just throw a number out there. If you counted 10,000 another 20 to count?
So I think we've counted about, I know we've counted a little over 12,000 votes, and I think we have another 12,000 to count.
Oh, got it. Okay. So things could change.
Yeah.
When is the final day for a ballot to be counted?
So we do the canvas, which means we present the results that we've tabulated to council on November 19th, on Tuesday, November 19th. And that'll be the last time that we can, that we will count votes. And so that morning, we will see if we have any ballots we've received by mail that are postmarked before November, on November 4th or before. The day before that is the last day for people to cure their signatures. What we have been doing and what we will continue to be doing is sending voters a letter if their signature didn't match, and they can mail back to us the affidavit that says, yes, I voted, yes, that's my signature, and then we'll count those votes. And the last day to get that in is the 18th, and by 5 o'clock that day. So then on the 19th, we'll tabulate whatever the last little bit is that we have to come in. That'll become part of the canvas, and we'll present that to council.
Okay, so back to the numbers of votes. So you're telling me that you sent out about 24,000 ballots?
We have registered voters of 29,718, and so we would have sent ballots to all of those who, unless they had asked not to have a ballot sent to them.
All right, so with still 12,000 to go, that would mean 100% basically people voting, which is never the case.
Well, 29,000, if we've counted 12,000, another 12,000 would be 24,000, so it's not 100%.
All right, so that's what you're thinking, though, is that that's about normal
that's
voter
of,
turnout?
I don't know for sure, but that is what I'm thinking. And, you know, in 2000, we had a 98% turnout.
Okay, that's impressive.
Yeah.
98? Okay. So
we've had a big turnout before, so we may have that again.
All right, so any issues to report? I mean, any problems with the machines, any voters that caused any problems for you?
Nope, the voters were great. They were patient. We did have a lot of new voters register yesterday, and so that required time at the polls, and the ballot was long, and so there were people who had to wait some, And so, but people were really patient and we were appreciative of that. No problems with the equipment, all good there. We, our biggest concern yesterday was the weather. As the rush hour and later into the evening, there was, with the snow, there was concerns about the roads. But we were able to get ballots back, no problem. And so, yeah, that was probably our biggest concern, was having folks on the roads with the ballots, but that all worked out just fine.
All right, and then for those who did vote in person, the machines were different than they were, I believe, 4 years ago. Does did the county purchase new machines, or do you rent them?
That's not accurate. The machines used this time were the same ones used 4 years ago.
Okay, so they were purchased then 4 years ago?
They were purchased in 2018, is my recollection.
All right, because the other ones used to actually kind of print. You could see the tabulation happening in a screen off to the, the machine. These actually, it prints a ballot that is put into the envelope.
That's exactly right. The ballot, the machines that we've been voting on since 2018 in person, They are what we call a ballot marking device. So in essence, it's much like a pen. It does not tabulate any results. It does not save what anyone has voted. It prints it out. They bring the printout, they put a printout in an envelope, put the envelope in the ballot drop box, or at the ballot box, and then that gets brought to our office. And we unfold that and count that.
All right. So how late were you and the staff up till last night?
We were in the office until 11:30, and we started the day at 6 a.m. getting the polls up and running. And so we went home and slept, and we are back here starting again today.
Okay. Well, good luck to you. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Joining me now in the studio, I have Park City City Manager Matt Dias. The Park City Council meeting Thursday, starting in work session at 3:30 to discuss that Main Street area plan. So good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for being here. This discussion comes up just prior to next week's open houses on the Main Street area plan. And I'm just like, whoa, it's just like so fast. I mean, it seems like this effort started, it did in May, even though we've had studies going back, decades. But now we're talking about adopting a plan by the end of the year. How did this happen so quick?
I think to begin, this has been a long time coming. We've had a few iterations of mayors and council members kind of contemplate or consider the next chapter for Main Street and a long-term planning process. That's coupled with what I believe has been a desire from the historic Park City Alliance, saying it's time. Give us some attention and focus on us, and let us help collaborate with stakeholders, the municipality, private property owners, public property owners, and contemplate our future. So I think it's been contemplated for a long time by the municipality and then really foisted upon us by the Park City Alliance. It says it's time to focus on us. There's a lot happening in our region. There's a tremendous amount of competition for visitors. We want to balance the impacts on our residential neighborhoods. And so the mayor and council actually asked for an accelerated planning process. The way we would typically do these processes is we would have months of public engagement and public input, open houses and meetings with sticky notes. We use multiple facilities. We sort of inverted the process here. Council said, pull in the best consultants that you can work with, pull in an important group of stakeholders that can represent the disparate interest in the Old Town area so that the committee is balanced, come up with some concepts, and then come back to us in the community. So we sort of inverted the process. In terms of the timeline, I think that's a fair question. These are funny. When you do enough of these, you're either moving too slow, and it's snail's pace, and government is slow and overly bureaucratic, or you're moving too fast, slow down. So this is really a self-imposed deadline. This is entirely up to the mayor and council as they deliberate towards the end of the year. They could extend the deadlines. They could ask us to do additional community input. They could have HPCA hold some community meetings. There's multiple ways we could go here. It's really a self-imposed deadline, but I'm encouraged. I think there are some very creative concepts under consideration here, and I believe we've done what we've been asked to do.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, what I've heard so far with this new plan really has felt like pie in the sky, outside the box. So is there really a refined plan for the council to even consider?
I believe so. And I'd like to say, I don't think it's really pie in the sky. I'd like to use the word bold, creative, innovative, and then also pulling some things off of the shelf that have been long contemplated but never acted on or never really explored with true feasibility. My estimation, this is one of the best collections of consultants that we've worked with. They've done an incredible job. I would really, really encourage members of the public, interested stakeholders and otherwise, to look at the PowerPoint presentation that's in our packet. It's exemplary. And I think it does a wonderful job of balancing these competing interests in Old Town. And like I said, pulling things off the shelf that have maybe been there in the past, we've never truly explored, things that we've talked about doing but perhaps never really had the courage. And this is the work of the committee. So this isn't staff driven. There's no sort of drive in City Hall for certain outcomes. We formed a committee of our peers, of our colleagues, of our stakeholders. And these are their ideas, working with the consultants, that they're suggesting the community and the council consider, contemplate, discuss, and debate.
Well, to your point that government is too slow, there's a great example of that. I mean, Main Street plan moves in 7 months. We're still trying to figure out what to do with the 5 acres on Bonanza. So why did the 5 acres take 7 years to approve and the Main Street area plan take 7 months?
Oh, God, that when you put it like that, that makes a lot of sense. But I think that's a gross oversimplification. We went through COVID. We had to acquire the property. Just like you said, we had to incur our own planning processes. We actually had the project at one point all the way to a master plan development proposal that council decided to suspend. And they had every right as the property owner to suspend that. COVID happened. We came back. We did an additional planning process. So on the one hand, I can oversimplify and say, hey, this was slow. What happened here? I like to say that was the way of things. That's what the community was asking for at the time. Either the plans were out of sync with the community needs or the financial aspects we couldn't support. And so we are where we are, but we're actually... I like to say, interestingly enough, we're moving really fast on both at the moment. I believe on, maybe it's tomorrow, the actual RFP for the 5 acre closes. So we'll be reviewing RFPs for the 5 acre parcel. It's a really, really important milestone. I think we're really proud, to your point, to get there finally. But look, these things take time. There's multiple prisms, the way you can evaluate these. And I just think sometimes you have to move fast, sometimes you move slow, and you can never please everyone.
Yeah. I guess when I say pie in the sky, I think of dollar bill, you know, expensive. And, you know, the council kind of shot down the Bonanza Park first project because it was over $100 million. What are we talking about when we look at what is proposed for Main Street?
Yeah, and I think that construct at the time was with the municipality as the developer, as the master developer, sort of the sole developer. And I think, you know, we have shifted our strategy. Our development pattern and strategies are far different when we're collaborating and doing joint ventures with the private sector. We're using strategically the value of our land and the value of our codes and our ordinances to create joint ventures with the private sector to bring to bear the assets that the community is desirable of, whether they're housing, whether they're economic development opportunities, whether they're open space, parks, and playgrounds. So we're entering this new realm, and this is an entirely different strategy now that we're contemplating, is using our assets, partnering with the private sector to consider joint ventures.
Yeah, well, and we kind of had that with the DoubleTree Yarrow project, and I've heard at least one company pulling out of that RFP process for Bonanza due to what happened there at the DoubleTree. Is Bonanza getting a better deal? I mean, are they going to be able to have 45 feet high buildings?
I don't know. It sounds entirely speculative. I don't believe that the applicant has withdrawn their application yet. I know there's been a bunch of interviews and media reporting. The last I checked, the application was actually still active. Now, I'm not speaking on their behalf. So since they have an active application, it's still technically before the Planning Commission and has not been withdrawn, I like to stay away from that question and stay away from speculating on their future. And however, whatever we do with the 5 acre parcel, to your point, it must be transparent. It'll be incredibly public. There'll be a deliberative process. We'll have to review multiple proposals. Council will deliberate. Whatever is contemplated there, we'll have to go through an entire planning commission process. And we hope that you and other members in the community will be a part of that.
So I'll ask on behalf of Mark Fisher and Aldi Milliken from the Kimball Arts Center, How soon can they have a new art center, given we've got that RFP closing this week?
I can't answer that question. That's just too simple of a question that I can't come up with an answer like that. But I can say this week that RFP closes, which is a major milestone. As you put it, we're probably 7 years in the making. We're really proud to be here. And we are moving, I'll call it heaven and earth, internally to prioritize this for the mayor and council because we know it's very important to them.
All right, let's move on to the China Bridge parking garage. When we talk about the needed improvements, we heard that the garage is going to last 10 more years, and if we do the repairs, does that mean it'll last another 20 years?
I'm not sure. I think there's two things occurring here. Two structures, the southern structure and the northern structure. The southern structure that you're referring to, I believe, was built in 1986, so it's a relatively old parking garage, but in the grand scheme of things, perhaps not. Due to our environmental conditions, salt, sand, and the corrosive aspects of freezing and thawing, it has a shorter lifespan than even we contemplated. We believe there's a maintenance schedule, an enhanced maintenance schedule, that we can elongate the lifespan of that structure, perhaps another 10 to 15 years. And we're going to make those investments, but we don't want to invest too much money because if we do contemplate a redevelopment opportunities in Sweet Alley or Main Street and otherwise, that's an incredible asset that's sort of on the board that needs a capital investment or infusion, and we would want to be really strategic and coordinated in our investment. So to answer your question specifically, I don't know yet. We will have a robust maintenance schedule to elongate its lifespan, but you probably won't see us go into a redevelopment phase until we make some decisions on the Main Street area.
Okay, so what I'm hearing is that it could mean that comes down.
Potentially, but I think that would be part of some sort of deliberate redevelopment, community redevelopment strategy, transportation, economic development, and otherwise in the Old Town area that we would do comprehensively.
Okay, the retaining wall along 224 is older than the China Bridge parking garage. It suffers from very similar.
I was just looking at that on the way in, actually.
I know. Yeah. That would be horrific to have some kind of landslide.
It would. Now, that wall is actually owned by the Utah Department of Transportation, and that road is owned by the Utah Department of Transportation. That's one of their facilities that they own, operate, control, and maintain. And we frequently have discussions with them where we say, hey, you know, it looks like it's listing, or it could use some additional paint or landscaping and otherwise, but this is on a long schedule of capital assets at the state level. They've maintained, they study it every few years. It's still sound. There are some areas that they go in and maintain and improve on an occasional basis. But by and large, believe it or not, they've told us that it's sound and they don't have any immediate concerns.
Okay. Speaking of slides, we've got two accidents still underway there in I-80 eastbound. We've got traffic backed up on I-80 eastbound nearly to State Street and then also to kind of the bend there on I-215 headed eastbound. So you're either stuck in traffic or sitting at home at this point. Wanted to ask about the latest on the community center. I was certainly as excited to see that there's going to be some enclosed bike parking, but is that supposed to start this spring?
It is. I think it's been a long time coming. We have a very aggressive schedule. I'm a little, I'm in here. I'm going to probably make some commitments that I'll regret a year and a half from now. But we're going to do everything we can to minimize the displacements. So we're going to, do a little bit of pre-construction work this spring and then likely make sure we can continue to operate the summer camp and then really come in the fall and truly go for it. But the brass tacks of it is we're almost doubling the size of the municipality's summer camp, which is a loved summer camp in town, truly utilized by the locals, heavily subsidized and offers scholarships for those qualifying or in need. And then this will be a year-round facility. So we're expanding the footprint, we're expanding the size, we're also renovating the basketball court, which is undersized, renovating the volleyball courts, which have been there for 10 to 25 years, and returning this building to year-round use as opposed to this very seasonal, very temporary use, doubling its capacity.
Yeah, so did the city miss an opportunity here, though, to put a second story on there and build some workforce housing?
I don't know. That sounds like an opinion. I don't know. I think we're open to that feedback if people want to provide that feedback. We were very careful and deliberate about making sure that it was compatible with the Miners Hospital that's directly adjacent to it, and it went through a planning process using different types of materials that were similar. But if people feel that way, that's the type of public comment we'd want to hear.
When does it go out for bids?
Let's see. I believe we are going out to bit off the top of my head. I believe we're going out this winter.
Okay. And we've got $15 million budgeted, but you never know until you get the bid back.
That's true. You never know. We've got the budget out there. We've had that budget out there for at least a year, if not more, but we really are trying to live to that.
All right. And then what about the aquatics area? When does that get underway?
So let's see. The aquatics area, the milestones, is we actually plan to put this out to bid as soon as this winter, even like the first week in January. We have a $7.5 million project budget. And the moral of the story here is we're expanding the lap and leisure pools. I think the lap pool has increased from 6 to 8 lanes, and the leisure pool is almost going to double in size. These also have been long time sort of sitting in the waiting improvements that different mayor and council and recreation team members have contemplated. So this is a very exciting expansion. Again, we're going to put the project out to bid this January, and then hopefully, you know, award bids and then start the construction as much as we can after the summer, after the summer season. The lap pool will be out of service this summer, though, likely. So there will have to be this temporary displacement. It's much like when you renovate a golf course. The only time you can really do that renovation is in the summer, and you ultimately have to go likely a season with or without the service. And so we will do what we can to minimize the impacts, but another really exciting community benefit improvement.
All right, speaking of golf course, the White Pine Touring contract expires, I believe, in April. So will they get a decision about whether or not they get to renew before then?
I think like most contracts that the municipality has, we will frequently have extension offerings, and this is, we're hitting that milestone. And so the mayor and council, the staff report, the mayor and council have a decision to either make some, work with the team to make some different type of amendments to the contract. We made some operational improvements and otherwise over the last couple of years and put it out for an RFP, or make some amendments and operational improvements and renew the contract with the existing vendor. So it's likely sort of the roads diverge. There's sort of two things that could occur.
I thought they had the option for a five-year renewal without going to RFP.
They do have that, so we can either mutually agree to renew, or we can mutually agree not to, and the municipality would put out a request for proposals. And so that's where the roads sort of diverge. And I suggest that the golf manager that manages the contract has some operational improvements that they've made working with the concessionaire over the last couple of years that I think both parties want to see put into any type of new contract or new RFP.
Mm-hmm. So does the city have any interest in taking over the Nordic Center?
You know, I don't think
I mean, like, it takes over, it runs the golf course.
It does, yeah. I don't think so off the top of my head. I you know, that's not typically an area we hold a lot of expertise in terms of the day-to-day aspect of grooming and track laying. Now, we do have a lot of expertise in parks and playgrounds and other types of maintenance, so I'm likely oversimplifying. But out of the gate, I think, you know, there's some things that if we can joint venture with the private sector, we're probably all better off to have less FTEs on the municipality and focus on the core functions of government, life, safety, health, welfare. These recreational offerings, yes, we have a robust recreation team, but currently we aren't contemplating that.
Okay, so I guess what I'm hearing is that we need to wait till the council decides what it wants to do on Thursday before kind of...
Yeah, Thursday ahead. Will be a recap of the past season, mm-hmm. and probably a look ahead for the season coming up, and then the mayor and council will get to work with the vendor to make a determination to renew or to put the contract back out for bid.
Okay, Matt, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just want to remind people, for the Main Street area plan where we started this interview, really importantly, Tuesday, November 12th, we have actually two kind of public open houses or public engagement opportunities. One is at 11 a.m. and the other, I'm sorry, one is at 9 a.m. and the other is at 4:30 in the afternoon. We're trying to ensure we get two pockets of opportunities where people that are either occupationally busy in the morning or in the afternoon or vice versa can attend one of these. So Tuesday, November 12th, 9 and 4:30 in the afternoon. The engagement sessions will be at Miners Hospital in City Park, okay?
Okay, Matt, thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
That's Park City City Manager Matt Dias.